Welcome to Cuckoo Bananas. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today, as I am every day, by Kate Gainey.
Forever and always.
How are you, Kate?
I'm all right. Doing all right. Doing all right.
You said that like we're two dads, like mowing our lawns, and you're miserably unhappy at work. And I'm like, how are you doing? You're like, all right.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, that's the energy I'm bringing today.
That's
bringing exhausted dad energy today. How are you?
I'm good. I'm okay. I'm at one of those places where all the balls that I'm juggling are staying up in the air for right now. I've had like a week's worth of good habits, so I'm doing okay. It all crumbles.
Hey, no, you're doing okay.
Okay, I'm trying to live in the moment.
Yeah, you're killing it.
I've meditated every day for like the last 2 weeks.
That's fantastic.
Well, one, you know what it is? My credit card, even though it's going to be the death of me, ironically, through my credit card, I get the Calm app for free.
That's fantastic.
Some fucker at the credit card company was like, this is funny. Let's give them this for free.
Oh my God.
Let's That's be great. The source of all of their dread.
Oh my God.
Give them a fucking meditation app for free. So I've been doing that. I've been doing the Calm app, and I figured out how to meditate every day. I figured it out.
And you cracked the code?
I did. Here's what it is. Just be bad at it. Just be like, I'm going to be bad at this. And I'm going to meditate poorly every day, but not for long, like 10 minutes. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's it. Just 10 minutes of being not good at something. And hey, if by any chance one day you happen to be okay at it, well, that's a pleasant surprise.
Right.
But the thing you've dedicated yourself to is being bad at meditating.
Yeah.
That's
one way to trick yourself.
That's the key I've figured out.
Because
I used to not, I used to do it and be like, I can't turn my brain off. I can't do it, blah, blah, blah. And then just not. And it's like, well, maybe I'm just bad. I'm just the bad meditator.
See, I think we all romanticize meditation. And we think that like when you meditate, you're supposed to reach this state where you're thinking nothing. And that doesn't happen. And like, I was reading something recently that was saying how it's that idea that keeps so many people from having successful meditation.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, but the idea of like empty your mind, like that's not going to happen. Just allow your thoughts. Like, don't try to force your thoughts. Don't, you know, like just allow them. Like that's what real, I think, meditation and release feels like, is just allowing your thoughts to come and go and not getting caught on any one of them and being able to acknowledge which ones matter, you know, quieting the nonsense, but not quieting your brain. Like, you can't do that. And if you keep telling people that this is some state they're going to achieve, you're just setting them up for disappointment.
Right, you're not going to be Buddha.
Right. And if by some magic or whatever you are Buddha, it's going to come to you through your practice of meditation anyway. So go in thinking you're not Buddha.
Right.
Same way you're going to go in thinking you're bad at meditation.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, I do, I get caught up in ideas and I have all those problems. But if for like, you know, if I have like 2 seconds of like actually letting go, I'm like, oh, that was a pretty good 10 minutes.
That was a good sesh.
At least I breathed for 10 minutes. I had 10 minutes of doing nothing but breathing, and that's nice.
I actually downloaded an app recently called Breathwork that I do like breathing exercises with. And I've been trying, my therapist has tried to get me to be more mindful of that as well. Like just taking some time throughout the day to like stand and take some deep breaths. It centers your mind and stuff, but it actually, when you're taking a really deep breath, like from your belly, It actually releases cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, making a regular practice of that can be really helpful to your mental and physical health.
Absolutely. Since you brought up your therapist, now's a good time to remind our listeners that me and Kate are not therapists. We're not psychiatrists. We're not psychologists. We are not mental health professionals. We are not healthcare professionals. We are two people talking about our own lives in a comedic way. Please do not use this podcast in lieu of actual help. You deserve help. Please go and get help. And the, you know, if you look at the description for this episode and every episode, there's some phone numbers in there that you might need. So, you know, good luck with that. But otherwise, hang out and chill with us. And we're just going to talk about how we're cuckoo.
Yeah.
today's don't sue us is the point. Today's episode is about, all right, it's about pets, but I've been thinking about this all week. It's more, to me, it's more about dogs, you know, but I know some people like have birds that they love or cats, like, and I if I wasn't allergic to cats, I'd have cats.
Yeah.
But my experience has been with dogs.
Same. So,
but in general, I just want to talk about like what having an animal companion brings to your life and the benefits it could have for mental health. Mm. You know, I didn't do a ton of research because that would involve effort, but I did look at the CDC website and, you know, CDC, Center for Disease Control. Here's something I got from them. Studies have shown that the bond between people and their pets can increase fitness, lower stress, and bring happiness to their owners. Some of the health benefits of having a pet include decreased blood pressure, decreased cholesterol levels, decreased triglyceride levels, decreased feelings of loneliness, increased opportunities for exercise and outdoor activity, and increased opportunities for socialization. And I agree.
Yeah, and some of those seem like, you know, like a bit more obvious, like, you know, you won't be lonely. You'll have a bug. You have increased opportunities to get outside. You got to walk this dog. But there are these other benefits that like you would never think
of. How do you lower my cholesterol?
Right. Talk to me about that. How are you doing that? That's incredible. Oh,
it's because I know why. It's because whenever I have cheese, he's like, give me some cheese. And then I give him some of my cheese. So I have less cheese.
And so my cholesterol is thus lower.
Now I get
sense
it.
Now. It all makes sense now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of these people that my life has been a series of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And dogs, I think, are very important because they teach you about life.
Yeah.
You know, like the world, you know, I read a book a year or two ago about trauma. And I know trauma is something you're really interested in.
Love trauma. totally fangirl over trauma.
Well, I know you're interested in learning about it. And this book focused on the trauma of losing a dog. And it was a really interesting choice because the author was like, I could talk about anything, but I'm going to talk about this because this is a kind of trauma that for some reason we don't respect.
That's really poignant, especially for me right now, because I recently began to acknowledge the trauma of losing a dog, because it wasn't just like, oh, the dog got old or sick or something. I've had a very, very tumultuous relationship with pets because I've always wanted a pet, mm-hmm. and my parents were not always pet people growing up.
Sure.
And so they would try for my sake.
Yeah.
And then we would often end up giving the dog away or, you know, whatever. And that probably fucked me up more than I know.
Wow. The giving a dog away?
Yeah, because that happened a lot. That happened. I remember three dogs.
Wow. And feelings of what? Failure? Or
just like attachment and then something being taken away from me without my control.
Oh, that sucks.
Because I was a kid. I can't make them keep this pet or anything like that. And oh my gosh, one of them, terrible, terrible. I went to school in the morning and I came home and my dog was gone.
Yeah.
Like... my dog that I had bonded with. Like, this wasn't a pet that I had for a minute. Like, this was, I had bonded with this dog. I had had this dog for months.
Wow, that's so sad.
Yeah, my relationship with pets is kind of fucked up. And I have, I worked with animals in a professional capacity. And now I have a dog that I adopted as an adult, you know, with my partner. So now the relationship is under my control, and that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But my history with pets is difficult.
Okay.
Sadly.
My history with pets is difficult. Well, no. It's difficult in the typical way, let's say. I never had that situation where my dog was given away, but I had this sort of typical situation of it dies. And before it dies, it gets old and it gets sick and it gets slow. And that's super hard to watch.
It's like an accelerated process of grieving. Like, you won't always get to watch people in your life reach those stages. You won't see everybody in your life get to the point of being old or sick or whatever, but in your lifetime you have the potential of witnessing, you know, however many full lifetimes of
that's
your
the
pets.
Crazy thing.
Yeah,
if you get it as a puppy, you have it as a perfect, fresh, completely healthy ball of energy, and then over, you know, 12 years, 13 years, which is nothing to you, they go from that perfect thing to old.
Mm-hmm.
And you know
still perfect.
I know, still perfect. But they're not in perfect health,
right? They require more maintenance.
Yeah I remember, I guess the first dog I really loved, I had a dog when I was a kid for a short while, that me and her never really got on. The first one I really loved was Max, and we got Max old. We saved him from death. They were gonna kill his ass, and Max. I was like come live with us. Max was they lied to us. They said he was like 9, and then we took him to the vet. The vet's like, this dog's like 11.
Yeah.
I think that we were like Max's retirement. We were his Florida. After a long life of adventuring, and I know there was some abuse at some point, and going from one family to another, we gave him the perfect happy ending to his life, because we adored him and pampered him and gave him everything he needed at the end.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. People are so obsessed with puppies and adopting puppies that it breaks my heart how many older, incredible dogs there are in shelters that
so
people should be visiting and falling in love with and adopting.
It's so sad, these people who get puppies and then bring them back when they're not puppies anymore. It's it is a responsibility.
Yeah. My current pup, the pup that my husband and I rescued, her name is Doris.
Nice.
She was found abandoned in a park with a male dog. She had clearly had litters, so like they essentially bred this dog and then just like were like, okay, we have your puppies, and released her into a park. Yeah, so you know, there are times that I can see that trauma in her. Like, there are certain, like, there, whenever I get a package, if I pick up a package or a box, she freaks out.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if, you know, she was put in a box or if she was hit or whatever it is, but she freaks out whenever I take in like packages or anything like that. But you know, like your family with Max, I feel like we have this opportunity to give her a better ending than her beginning.
Yeah. It's a beautiful opportunity.
Yeah. That's so unique. It's different. I mean, of course, there are people who adopt children and give them opportunities they didn't have in childhood. But that's a less accessible thing. It's a larger commitment, arguably. But there's something about being able to do that for another living creature, like to be able to say like, okay, I'll take care of you. I'll make it better.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. if my mother died, I would be able to take off work and everyone would understand. But if my dog died and I tried to take off work, many people wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
Or would mock me or be like, get over it.
Right.
And why? That makes no sense to me.
I completely agree with you. There are, I don't understand it, but there are people who are just not fans of animals and who just don't understand that bond between a human and an animal. And to them, it seems like you're almost trivializing the bond between humans or family,
right?
By
right.
saying well, right. that you extend this to an animal,
right?
But
right.
That is fam.
Right. We're not going to give you bereavement leave,
right?
Because you're your dog, and it's like, but you know what? Like, you let's say you have a cousin who passes away. You don't live with your cousin. You live with right. your dog. Like your dog.
You didn't feed and care for your cousin every day of their life, and yeah,
it's a dog is an immediate member of your tribe,
yeah,
of your pack.
Yep.
So the idea that like you're gonna be like, oh, no big deal, and what's and you know, people sometimes go through this pain and other people just don't understand it, and it's yeah. it's crazy to me. I had a dog who passed away like a year ago, my dog Lucy, who we got from a puppy and had her whole life. And unlike Max, who kind of like had a slow decline, Lucy was like fine. And then one day she like passed out, and then we brought her to the animal hospital and they were like, she's not breathing. So they had to keep her in this low oxygen tank where the air was very thin. And she was totally normal inside there. So, like, I'd go and visit her, and she'd, like, jump up and be her normal self inside the tank, but she couldn't live outside the tank.
Oh, baby.
And I said to, like, the vet tech, I was like, so, like, how much are these tanks? She was like, people ask that all the time. And I was like, and we had to, you know, and this was, like, by the way, the week of Christmas.
Oh, God.
I know.
No.
So, it was... We tried a couple of different medicines to maybe help her. And, you know, they would take her out of the oxygen tank for a couple minutes and then she'd start choking again. So we had to just let her go. And I have to say, it's the most open-heartedly I've cried since I was a baby. Mm-hmm. Like, I just cried in front of people, sobbing, ugly crying. And I have not done that at any human beings' funerals.
Yeah.
And maybe because there's nothing complicated about a dog.
It's like, I was just having that thought. It's just such a pure love. It's there's nothing comparable. It's not the same as anything else. And if you're not a person who, you know, like understands or experiences that love, it seems like it's silly, but it's such a pure and like unconditional, truly, yeah. truly unconditional love. It's not, there's no judgment. There's no need for apologies. There's like,
right. there's no just, slights. There's no yeah. like, we didn't talk to each other for a few months in 1988.
Right.
Because
there's no, there was that time my boyfriend. I didn't show up for the birthday party and, or, you know, I wore the same dress
money.
As part of this event. Right. I borrowed money a few years ago and I just haven't been talking to you since. Like, there's none of that. There's sure. just pure love, and it's also dependence, but it's love. It's such this incredible love and bond that there is nothing else like.
You know, well, you say it's dependence, which is true. But, you know, I always think it's funny when people who try to, like, burst the bubble and be like, oh, they don't really love you. You just give them food. And it's like, why do you think that, like, why does a baby love its mother? Like, right. why?
What are the foundations of love? They're yeah. taking care of somebody. And
like, why do you think you're bursting my bubble by saying shit like that?
Like, right.
Like, it's stupid. Like, yeah, and if I hit it, it would hate me. You know what I mean?
Right.
I feed it and keep it warm, and it loves me. And yes, like, why would dependence not be?
And my pet knows they can rely on me. That's what that comes down to, is like, this person is always going to come back for me. This person is always going to feed me. This person is always going to play with me. Like, you know, I'm always coming back.
Right. And how about what you get? I think many human beings, either male or female, doesn't matter the gender, have a need and desire to take care of something and get a lot of oxytocin from taking care of something. And so why
we get house plants and stuff too. Right. It's all so the
why
same
is that bad?
Shit. Right. Yeah. I think that, so just to backtrack a little bit about my relationship with pets. So as a kid, I've always been an animal lover. I've always wanted pets. And I always wanted a dog specifically, always wanted to have a dog. And my parents were not into it. My parents used to, for a while, say they were allergic. Eventually, I found out mostly it was my mother was kind of afraid of them.
Oh, okay.
And that was a thing. And now as an adult, like, it's complicated, but I do acknowledge that she really tried for me. Even though she was scared of this thing, she tried to do it for me. So the first dog I had, I was probably about 8.
Okay.
And his name was Barkley.
Great name.
He is the man. He was a great dog. We adopted him from another family. He was older. He was already trained. But he was a Rottweiler mix, which they're one of my favorite breeds.
Right.
But for someone who's scared of dogs, they're very scary looking. They're intimidating looking. They look like bear cubs. But they're, in general, you know, depending on how you train them, like, they could be incredibly loyal, sweet family dogs. And he was really sweet, but my mother was terrified of him. My mother was hiding in her room away from this dog all the time. And that's no way to live in your own house. So Barkley ended up going back to his old family. And I'm sure they found somebody else to adopt him. But we only had him for maybe about 3 days.
Was she ever bit or something?
So I don't think, you know, I'm not positive. I know my grandmother was really scared of dogs too.
Sure.
And I think maybe it was just kind of learned behavior. I think maybe my grandmother was bit or something like that.
Okay.
And then it was kind of learned behavior, like, oh, don't go near dogs, they're scary.
Sure.
So a few years later, we got Baby, which was a dog that we like bought from a store, which I am very much against in my adulthood and, you know, in my awareness of those things. But we went to a pet store and we brought home this dog, and I was a child. I had no responsibility really in training the dog or anything like that. But it was unsuccessful. You know, my parents trying to train him and stuff like that, like, it just wasn't going well.
Yeah.
So after a few months, that was the dog that I came home from school and he was just gone. And that was really rough. Because I don't care about the dog chewing on the table legs and stuff. I bonded with the dog.
Right.
I was 9. You know, I was a kid.
Did you know, like, it was coming? Was it a complete shock? Or was it like, oh, this dog's fucking up, he might get kicked out?
Yeah, I knew it was coming. It was like, you know, we're thinking about it. But I was fighting it. I was trying to talk to my parents about keeping the dog. I was fighting for my dog.
Were you talking to the dog like, please just be good?
Yeah. Oh my God. I used please to beg him. Good. I would be like, baby, please stop chewing on the table legs. Like, baby, please. And they gave him away one day while I was at school. So that was awesome.
They wanted to avoid the goodbye.
Yeah. So instead, just, you know, traumatize me. Cool. and then there was Nala, who was like the coolest, and she was my girl and I adored her. And she was a mutt. She was like, she was every kind of dog you can imagine. She was, oh my God, she was the best. She had like the loose skin that you could pull at. She was like, oh, she was the best. And she was huge. She was part Newfoundland.
Okay.
Those are those big, shaggy dogs that they use in the Coast Guard. to the,
okay.
They have actually webbed paws. They're the only breed that has webbing between their paws. So that's how we knew she was part Newfoundland, because she had the webbing. But she was huge. She was huge. So she was still a baby and she was gigantic.
Wow.
So she was jumping around like a puppy and whatever, like not doing anything wrong, but it really scared my mother. So Nala only lasted a few months also.
Yeah.
So like, that's my foundation with pets.
But why did they always go for the big dogs?
I don't.
If there was a fear there.
So, yeah. So that's the thing, is we finally learned our lesson eventually. And I'm saying we, but this is all my parents at this stage in life. And
you had very little vote.
You know, I didn't have anything to do with it. but when I was around 15 or 16, we finally got a smaller dog. We got a Yorkie.
Franco. And
Franco, the who man. I've met. Yeah, Franco's a delight.
He had his own MySpace, didn't he?
He sure did. He had a MySpace. He had a Facebook.
You bet.
Yeah, he went through social media platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a Yorkie now.
Yeah. They're great dogs, but yeah. They're a lot. They have a lot of energy. They need a lot of attention.
Big personalities.
Yeah, they have Napoleon complexes.
Oh yeah.
And Franco, arguably the most traumatic story, maybe. Franco was my pup for 10 years, and Franco gave me all the good stuff that pups give you. Like, he slept in my bed with me, and he always was excited to see me when I came home, and he was my friend when I felt like I had none, and he was my dog for 10 years. And then I moved out. Because I was 25 and I was moving out, and Franco was home with my dad.
Yeah.
And one day I called to talk to my dad and I asked how Franco was doing. And I was told that my dad just gave him away. So I freaked out and I told my dad to call these people and let them know what the situation was and see if they would either let me see him to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Or let me take him home with me. And I would figure out something. I would figure out a way to keep him. And my dad did. And he found out from these people that they had brought Franco to the shelter.
Okay.
So I called the shelter. And being a person who had worked in an animal hospital and all of that stuff, like, you know, I was able to contact someone who worked at the shelter. Because it's not like there isn't a listed phone number for you to call the shelter.
Right.
And I was told that he was brought to a rescue, and I'll never know if that's the truth or if he died alone or if some wonderful family took him in and gave him a wonderful end of life, but I will never know. And it's, you know, I have to accept and understand that he's likely dead now, because he would be probably about 16 or 17 years old. And that's just not typical of a Yorkie.
Right.
So that has been a hard one to come to terms with. Like, this is honestly one of the first times I'm really even talking about it. I just have kind of buried it because I was really, really angry about it for a long time. Angry with my father, angry with myself. So that's been hard to deal with. You know, it's because that bond is so strong, because you are able to connect with animals on this level that I don't think you can connect with other humans on. Like, there is this just understanding and this love between a person and their pet.
Yeah. With Max, we all loved Max, but when he was really sick, my dad, who he says he regrets this, he brought him to, I guess, a shelter. I'm not sure where my dad brought him. Mm-hmm. And they had, like, I forget the whole story, all the intricacies, but they had told him, like, we're going to put him to sleep and he won't be in pain. And, you know, for some reason, he couldn't be there for it, which I don't know what that was or whatever.
Sketchy.
Yeah, it was sketchy. And then they called him later and he was still alive. And my dad was like, why didn't you do it? My dog has just been in a cage all day. God. And then eventually it happened. And I know he feels bad, so I've healed a little bit. But when it first happened, I was really angry at my father. Because I feel, because, well, you know, he took him without telling me. Just one day I was like, where's Max? And my mother was like, oh, your father took him. And I was like, I didn't say goodbye to my dog. I'd like a little bit of preparation. And
parents, stop thinking you're protecting your kids from heartache by not letting them go through difficult things.
Yeah.
And I was
like 25, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all.
It doesn't matter at all.
Child, and he still was trying to protect you from a heartache, which is a completely understandable thing for a parent to do. It's, you know, we want to protect our children,
right.
But like, you can't keep your children from difficult emotions. Right. Oh,
I still sometimes, if you get that headspace where you just want to hurt, you want to hurt yourself.
Been there all day today.
Sometimes when I'm in that space, I just imagine him in the last hour of his life. Mm-hmm. I just imagine him alone, because he was also a timid dog. So I imagine him alone, scared, and looking for me and wondering where I was. And it kills me. And from that, me and my dad and my whole family, we learned that when it comes to that point, you have to be assertive and you have to be like, no, this is what's going to happen. And
yeah, you have to be able to advocate them for them the way, right, you would for your children.
And when Lucy passed away, she was the one who couldn't breathe. She was in the oxygen tank. We were with her the whole time. They took her out of the oxygen and they gave her like a little oxygen tube to like kind of be breathing. But then, you know, it was me, my dad, and my younger brother. My older brother and my mom couldn't be there. They were in the other room. They just couldn't be there for that, which I understand. Some people can. I feel like my mother's pain was as much, if not worse, than mine. But she just she didn't want to see that. Me, after what I felt for Max, I was like, I owe it to her. And when they injected her, I think my father was petting her back and my brother was like scratching her butt and I was stroking her face. And when she died, or the moment before she died, I looked her in the eyes and I said, I love you. And I said, thank you. And then she passed away. And it's incredible. Even now it's incredibly painful, but I'm glad I got to thank her for everything she did. I'm glad she got what Max couldn't get. She was with her family and she just went to sleep. And that's the best. That's what we should all do for our dogs. And it's, you know, like I said, my dad, I don't blame my dad anymore. I was mad for a while, but that was really just misplaced emotions. I wanted to feel something, so I turned it into anger. The truth is, you don't know, you know, like, especially if you haven't been through it before, like, you know, like, you don't know what to demand. You don't know what to ask for. You don't know where to go, where to take a dog. You don't know, you know, you think, oh, someone else knows, but they, you know, they might not care, you don't have the care that you do. And, you know, I know now that you have to like go to an animal hospital and you have to be like, this is what I want to happen. And I want to be present for it.
Right.
And, you know, that's that. Yeah. Lucy, we got from a baby till the first time I held her, she was like 6 months old and tiny. And then I held her when she died and I got the whole, and you know, there's something very, you were kind of saying this before. There's something you learn about life from just the whole process, even the painful death part.
Yep. You're observing a full life, you know, you're part of a whole lifetime for this being. You're everything to this being in their lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, and it can give you purpose when you feel like you have none, and it could make you feel important and valid and worthy and all of those feelings when humans can't give you that sometimes.
Right.
You know, like when you're in a space where you're not accepting that from humans, sometimes it's easier to accept, you know, that kind of love from your pet. And I mean, again, like you, my experiences with dogs, it's not, you know, I had a bird as a kid. We tried out a bird because we couldn't have a dog, but that didn't work out either. And they gave that away too. And told me, you know what they told me that I didn't put it together until I was an adult, that there's no way it was true. They told me that my parakeet went to live on a farm with a doctor in South Africa. And my 6-year-old self was like, that's legit.
That checks out.
All right. So Tweety Bluebird's okay then. And I want to say I was maybe like 20. And we were like talking about pets one day, like sitting around with family. And I was like, you sons of bitches. There is no fucking way that that bird. And my parents started laughing. And I was like, it's not funny.
No.
Oh, God.
I know. Oh, God. And you know, after Lucy died, we got another puppy. And so the cycle
started the cycle over. Yep. Sorry, go ahead.
It was stupid. I don't know who it was. I can't take credit for this joke, but I saw some meme or something. It was about Star Wars. It was about The Force Awakens, where, spoiler alert, Han Solo dies.
Oh, boy.
And somebody said, like, it's weird that Chewbacca just, like, keeps going. Like, Chewbacca just, like, straight, like, is flying the Millennium Falcon. Is just, like, best friends with Rey now. And then someone else was like, well, Wookiees live to be, like, 400. So, like, Han Solo was, like, his third dog.
Yeah. It's true.
So he was just like, all right, I'm gonna have Rey now. Rey's
right? Like, now I'm going to adopt this pup.
Yeah. It into perspective.
Right? I like that. I will say, just on the topic of like euthanasia and all of that, as someone who worked in an animal hospital for a while, there were times where an owner couldn't be present for one reason or the other, or didn't want to, when a pet was being put to sleep. And I always felt really honored to kind of be the person who was there with the dog or the cat at those last moments. And I have to hope that most other animal hospitals and stuff are filled with people who love animals the same way mine was. And that, you know, that we make sure that they're not scared and that they're told that they're loved and they're told that they're special and that they were good and that they're a good boy or a good girl or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, we make sure to pet their head and, you know, to take good care of them. And, you know, even I even always took care with getting their bodies ready and stuff like that. Like it was, it's almost a healing experience to do all of that too, to take care of all those end of life things for another being, because not everybody has the constitution to do that for a human. Like I know I could never work, you know, as a funeral director or, you know, a coroner or anything like that. Like, I know I couldn't do that. But being able to assist with that end of life process, because it's kind of beautiful in a way.
Yeah, it is. And let me correct what I said before, where if you can't be there, or if you just, you can't, it'll break your heart too much. I'm not judging you. For me, I want to be there for that. But if you can't be there for that moment and you don't want to see the moment where they lose their life, I'm not going to judge you for that.
Right. I can understand it. And I do think sometimes people are judged too harshly for that.
No. dogs are special in that they are the product of artificial selection.
Yeah.
Dogs, you know, gray wolves became dogs by attaching themselves to our evolution, and they evolved along with us. So they're useless without us for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they say dogs are man's best friend. They mean mankind.
Yeah. You
know, our species are intricately related. And I kind of feel in a spiritual way that like all humans have a responsibility to all dogs.
Yeah.
You know, they give us so much, and, you know, I think they're only here for a short time. So just give them what they need. But, you know, this is off topic, but I can't wait till we finally evolve to, accepting euthanasia for humans.
Yeah, I thought about that when we were talking earlier about how that's a unique thing about having a pet, is that at the end of life, you're often faced with the choice. Like, they don't always just go on their own. Like, you usually right. see them get really ill, and then you're given the option to end their suffering.
Right.
And that's, you know, I'm interested in the concept of human right. euthanasia, and, you know, allowing that choice to people who are terminally ill and stuff. Right. And it's an interesting thing to think about. Yeah.
It's humane for animals. It should be humane for us. I understand the religious reasons that mm-hmm. people don't want to do it and stuff like that. But, like, you know, recently my grandmother died, and she lived to 94. She was almost 95. So she had a super long life. She was not cut down in her prime. She fucking did it all, saw it all. And I can say, you know, I was, of course, sad when she died because I loved her, and I gave her eulogy with my brother. But I can tell you that when she died, my first feeling was relief and happiness, because the last time I had seen her was a week before she died, and I had seen her through Zoom because during COVID I was not allowed to visit her, and she was lying in a bed writhing in pain, screaming that her legs hurt, and it was the most pathetic, sad thing I ever saw. And she had dementia, so she didn't know, she was just living in a hell of physical pain. Mm-hmm. And I remember that night thinking, please just let her pass away, please. Right. Her existence is pain. And why, what is anybody gaining from keeping her alive?
Yeah.
You know, life is whatever. She ended up passing on her own. She ended up doing what a lot of people do, which is make the decision for themselves and stop eating.
Yeah.
You know, when a person stops eating, that's it. They say, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my grandmother lived for 95 years. The last five were pretty miserable, to the point where I would trade those in. I would trade those in for her to die happy mm-hmm. and with her memories.
Yeah.
And I bet she would too if she had the ability to make that deal. I don't know. This is a tangent, but
semi-related.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, my current pup, my Doris, is probably the best emotional support animal I have ever encountered. Like, she
really?
She truly, like, she's very in tune with emotions. 100%. Wow. She'll come to you when you need her, and she'll leave you alone when you need her to.
Wow.
But she's incredibly cuddly. She will nuzzle and burrow and get as close to you as she can possibly be. She's a very, very, very sweet dog. And she's exactly what I needed when we went out to adopt a dog. Like, we went to the shelter, and, you know, you walk the kennel, and there's all these dogs jumping up for your attention. And she was just kind of calmly sitting in the back of the kennel,
playing it aloof.
Yeah. And we were like, let's see what this lady's all about.
Hard to get.
Yeah. So we took her out for a walk, and she got, once you put her on a leash, she's not great on a leash, so she was a little bit crazy. We just absolutely fell in love with her, and I was pregnant when we adopted her, and she was so gentle and sweet with me.
Wow.
She anytime I went to the bathroom, she would sit outside the bathroom and wait for me, and, like, I think that affected our bond, the fact that I was pregnant when we adopted her. And, you know, there was a little bit of nervousness that, what if something happens when I have the baby? Like, what if I have the baby and the baby and the dog don't get along, or, you know, but there was absolutely none of that ever. My kids have grown up right alongside Doris, like, pulling her tail and, you know, doing all those kid things. And Doris is so patient and sweet with them and with us. Like, anybody who meets her is immediately completely enamored with her.
Yeah.
She's just one of those.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
We really found the right one.
This is your children's first dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you think about when Doris passes away, hopefully a long time from now.
Oh my gosh.
It'll be the first time for your kids.
Yeah. So, you know, my son is only two, so we don't really have too many of these conversations, but I do, you know, my daughter and I talk about death, and it's something that I unfortunately can't avoid because her grandfather died during her lifetime.
Yeah.
But my mother has been dead since she's born, and she wonders where her grandmother is and where her grandfather is. So I have to talk to her about death. I can't avoid that. And I am not the type to sugarcoat it and be like, well, you know, grandma and grandpa are in this magical place. And, you know, like, right. I don't necessarily want to give her that belief. If that's what she grows to believe, then that's beautiful and fine. Yeah. But I'm not going to give that to her. So what I tell her is that, you know, they live in our heart. That's how we continue to carry them. And yeah. that she knows her grandmother because she knows me. And so many of the things that I say and do are because of her grandmother.
Wow.
And I think that, you know, talking with her about death that way will make it easier when it comes time for her to have to cope with death.
Yeah.
She's got to watch me do it all the time.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. You like death, you can't treat it like an aberration that should never happen.
Mm-hmm.
You have to live with it. You have to treat it like it's something that has to happen and always does happen.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Although it's natural to think of it as an aberration, even though it happens to all living things.
Sure.
Because
it's unpleasant. And I think, we just, you know, we want to block it out. We don't want to think about the end of things.
Yeah, I think human beings are very narrative minded. So mm-hmm. I think the idea of somebody's story just stopping, mm-hmm. it's very hard for our brains literally to deal with.
Yeah.
The cultural critic Susan Sontag had a great quote where she said, "Death is the opposite of everything." And I think that's so true. Like, it feels like, I've had people die and I've thought, well, how could you die? You can't die. Mm-hmm. Like, dying is for other people, not you. No, it actually happens to literally every single person.
Everyone. And I try, you know, again, with trying to raise kids with a healthy attitude toward death. Like, I can remember having this conversation with my daughter, maybe at like 3 years old, and, you know, explaining that everything that lives dies.
Yeah.
And I remember going for a walk with her and her like pointing at things and asking, like, is that alive? Will that die? Like, you know, and like explaining that the trees die in certain seasons and then come back, and, you know, that the animals will die and that, you know,
right.
other animals eat those animals. And, you know, so I'm trying to, you know, give my children a healthier attitude about death, because I think growing up, I had parents who were living through grief, who had lost their parent. Both of my parents had lost their fathers young. Mm. So I watched them deal with their grief throughout life. And I don't think I learned a healthy way of coping. So now I have the opportunity to show my children, like, this is inevitable. This is inevitable. You will experience grief and pain, and people that you love are going to die, dead people and pets. And, you know, you will have to deal with death, and it's another part of life, and it's difficult and it's painful, but it's not the end of your existence.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess before we wrap it up, we've talked about like life and death and stuff. Let's talk about like having an animal while you're depressed. Mm. I know that when I had Lucy, I had some really dark times, and there were times where she was just my therapist. I was literally just talking to her. I was like lying down on my back on the floor and just being like, fucking Lucy, I do not know if I can do anything today. And just like, and you know, she's pretty sure she didn't understand me, but often they can feel what you're putting out. They can mm-hmm. sense when something's wrong. And, you know, all dogs are therapy dogs. I think, you know, I can't imagine what kind of a dog, you know, obviously there's some dogs that have aggression. Some, you know, every dog has a different temperament. But I can't think of any dog that makes you feel worse. Like, oh, I felt sad about my life, and then I hung out with a dog, and now I feel worse.
And the dog was just razzing on me the whole time.
You know, and I know cat, and I want to say a little bit about cats because we've talked so much about dogs. Mm-hmm. I know cats are super intuitive, and cats really know when things are wrong. A friend of mine was going through something really, really hard, and her cat would literally bring her flowers.
Oh,
like it knew something wrong with you. So let me bring you something.
Oh, you know, cats are very sweet like that.
Yeah, yeah. Cats are super smart, so they really pick up on when something's happening.
I've really only had the opportunity to be exposed to cats through work because my mother was very, very allergic. So like even if I only had one family member that had a cat, but the cat was always put away, you know, before we came over because my mom was allergic. So I really didn't get to experience cats until I started working with animals. And I understand, you know, because I think growing up, not being around cats or being a quote unquote cat person, you know, I didn't understand the way I did, you know, about dogs. I still don't because I've never had a cat, but I did get the opportunity to fall in love with cats, you know, what, as patients.
Yeah, well, I didn't have the experience you had working in an animal hospital, but I certainly had cat friends.
Yeah,
I certainly had cat friends that would be like, hey, how are you today? Oh, you're good. I used to donate after Max died. In honor of him, I donated like $20 a month to the ASPCA for a year. And I used to tell animals when I met them that I was part of the ASPCA as a way of being like, hey, I'm cool.
Just so you know, I'm taking care of you in the ways I can.
Yeah. Just so you know, I'm an ally.
Right.
I remember, have you ever had any experience with an actual like paid, I don't know if they're paid. That's so stupid. An actual professional therapy dog?
Oh, no. No, I haven't.
I was at a nursing home visiting my grandmother when she was alive, and I was on an elevator and there was a person there with a therapy dog. And I was like, oh, it's a therapy dog. Going to see some old people today. And then the dog human was like, yeah, this is whatever. You know, you could say hello. And then I pet the dog and I felt good. And then I was like, you son of a bitch, you got me too. Look at you, always working. you know, it's just, and what's amazing about a therapy dog is they don't, again, we get so much out of giving. Some therapy dogs often just let you pet them. And you'd be like, they're not giving you anything.
Nope, they're just there. Like,
you can love me and feel good.
Yeah, use me as a living stress ball.
Yeah.
Just pet me and feel the warmth and they're just so comforting. They're just comforting creatures.
Yeah.
And I know cats that are that way too. You know, I know cats that are, you know, like aloof and, you know, I feel like that's part of the charm of cats for some people is that they are so like independent and stuff, but they're also just so, so sweet. Like these animals are just, they're so pure and they're kind and I just, we're so lucky. We're so lucky that we get to cuddle these things.
I know. I saw a meme once that was like, the only difference between cats and dogs is dogs like jump up on you and cats act like it's a coincidence that they're always in the same room as you.
Yeah.
So there are certain wild animals that I really want to cuddle, but the law says I can't.
Mm.
Namely raccoons.
Oh, they're great. You can, there are like raccoon like rehabs and stuff that you could work with where you can actually handle raccoons.
Well, I don't want to meet any drug addicts raccoons.
I mean, they deserve a second chance.
You're right. I'm sorry. Who am I to judge? Who am I to judge? I've had my problems.
What is with the stigma here?
I know. otters. Oh, they hold hands when they sleep.
Yeah, they're just divine. I no. This is too much. Bears.
Oh my God, like a little baby cub.
They have no business looking like that.
I know.
They have no business being that cute and fluffy and also like would tear you limb from limb. Right.
Nothing that grows up to be that scary and dangerous should look that cute as a child. Like the change is intense.
Yeah, it's a trap.
I would say my unprofessional opinion would be if you are depressed and if you are suffering from anxiety or some sort of mental health issue, if you have the strength to take care of an animal properly, I would say go for it. Yeah. Go for it. If you don't have that strength.
Yeah, but you can go see if you can volunteer at a shelter.
Yeah, make it
animal. You know, spend some time with some animals. If you have access to a stable, go hang out with some horses, because they're incredible therapy animals.
Wow. See, I've never gotten that close to a horse, but I think they're beautiful.
They're gorgeous and they are incredible therapy animals. I was lucky enough to get to be around horses a little bit when I was living in Florida. I had a friend who took care of horses. My brother-in-law, my younger brother-in-law, has Down syndrome, and he benefits from therapy with horses.
Wow.
They're incredible. They're incredibly intuitive. They're really, really sweet. And they make these connections with people.
Wow.
That are, it really, honestly, if you have any interest in it, like, look it up, because the bonds that horses and humans have are incredible.
Do you know that, and this might be wrong, but this is, I've heard this, or I think I read this, when Christopher Reeve fell off his horse and became paraplegic, he protected the horse. He made sure that the horse was safe and nothing bad could happen to the horse, and nobody got rid of the horse or anything like that.
Aww.
He was like, well, no, we gotta take care of the horse.
Yeah.
We made a mistake, that's all.
Yeah.
You know, and I should say, I don't understand this experience, but I have friends that are reptile lovers, friends that have lizards, friends that have frogs, and I could get how a frog can be cute, but people have snakes. To me, snakes are always scary, no matter what.
Mm.
But, you know, people get something out of it, you know?
Yeah.
We're just animals. It's part of it is accepting that you are an animal as well.
Yeah. And it's really in the way that I also take care of my houseplants, pouring my love and care into something and watching it grow and flourish and be happy helps me. Today, that's what pulled me out of a depression.
Yeah.
Today I was laying in bed miserable and I realized that I had to go take care of my plants. And I love my plants and I want them to continue growing and flowering and I don't want them to suffer. So I gotta get up. And there are days that Doris does that for me too. And you know, there are days that I can't get out of bed and she just comes and curls up in bed with me and lets it happen, you know?
Doris.
She is such a girl.
That's wonderful. What a blessing, really. What a blessing that we get to have this in our lives.
Truly.
We
are lucky.
You know, I feel that way a little bit about my villagers at Animal Crossing.
Mm.
I never tell them to stay. If they want to leave, I say follow your dreams.
Always.
Unless they're like really super cute and I want to keep them. But for the most part, I'm like, you know what? Go ahead and live your dreams.
Yeah. You want to go? Who am I to tell you to stay?
Yeah.
If you're talking to me about leaving, you must have been thinking about this.
Yeah.
I want you to experience new things.
I saw you walking around with your head down and a bubble over your head. I know you're thinking about it.
I see you deep in it right now.
Yeah.
I know some the world, people, man.
Some people who've played it a long time get like the exact villagers they want and then like refuse.
Yeah.
You can't just own these creatures.
Right? I'm lucky that none of the ones that I wouldn't want to leave have ever asked me to leave. I've never had to be like, oh man, I really don't want to let you go.
My girlfriend she's managed to get an all-female island.
Wow.
She doesn't allow male islanders there.
I love it.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful little utopia. It's
love wonderful. It. Little Lady Island.
It has ketchup, which is, I think,
one of Oh, so cute.
My islanders are, for the most part, ugly. But you know what? That's who they are, and I love them for it.
You know, I have to say there are a couple of islanders that I have, my villagers that moved in, that I didn't like at first, that I fell in love with. Like, there's this one, Marcel, who creeped me out.
Is that the one with the his eyes are always angry?
No.
Oh, who am I
thinking? He's a dog with like a mime looking face. Like it looks like he has face paint on.
Oh no, I don't know him.
And I
well, that's why his name is Marcel.
Marcel, yeah, he's great.
Okay.
I did not like him at first. He creeped me out.
Sure.
But then one day I caught him like running around all silly. And I just sat there and watched him run around for a while. And I was like, he's pretty cute.
Yeah.
Look at him frolicking. He's fun. Having a really good time.
That's nice. That's nice. I love when you check in on a villager and you haven't seen them for a while. And like, you're super into their apartment. And it's like, this is your aesthetic? Like, it seems like a fucking 70s fuck pad in here. And
one of my villagers literally lives in a dump. It's just a dump. Like the wallpaper is garbage. Everything is garbage. Like, why do you live this way? You're worth so much more than this.
Oh my God.
I'm just going to keep gifting them things until they can redo their home.
Yeah. Take this nice, pretty wallpaper.
Here's some wallpaper. Fucking fix it up.
Can you building with your life, please?
Oh my God. Your environment is atrocious.
Yeah. If you can't afford or aren't responsible enough to get an animal, play Animal Crossing.
For real.
For real. Absolutely. Virtual, that's something we don't have time to talk about. But virtual animals and stuff like that is, I think, very useful. Like, you even see now with, like, older patients, like dementia patients, they'll give them, like, stuffed animals.
Baby dolls.
Right. Yeah. Like, and, you know, it helps them. So
there's something about that simulation.
Yeah. Well, we did it again. Another emotional episode.
I think that should be the title of my biography.
Yep.
We did it again. Another emotional episode.
Another emotional episode. And just you on the cover like, eh?
Yeah, you know.
This is Cuckoo Bananas. This podcast is available anywhere podcasts are found. You can follow Cuckoo Bananas at Cuckoo Bananas Pod on Instagram. I'm Mike Vangiorno. And I'm with Kate Gainey. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.